And now, today's word.
The father and his household. The father and his household. And this is part 7. And my subtitle is children. We started talking about the father and his household. We talked about Eden. We talked about outcasts. We talked about our friends. We talked about the servants. We talked about the tabernacle. We've talked about the last Adam, which we did last week. And today we are concluding the finale of it, children. And in this series, which I believe is a very important study in God's dealing with mankind, we have looked at how God has dealt with man from the Garden of Eden up till now, and the various relationships he has sustained with us. And I said from the beginning that God's relationship with us will determine what we receive from him or what we can take from him. The fact that we are all alive does not mean we have the same relationship with God. And it doesn't mean that throughout history, people have had the same relationship with God. So today, we're looking at children in the last phase of that relationship. When God started dealing with man in the Garden of Eden after man sinned and fell, he promised in Genesis chapter 3 verse 15 that the seed of the woman shall come to bruise the head of the serpent. And throughout different types and shadows in the Old Testament, he showed that a Messiah was going to come. And then he also used the prophets to announce the coming of the Messiah. And there were all kinds of indications giving about one who would come, who would fix the problem of mankind. In this last session, we're going to do a lot of study in the gospel according to St. John. So I'm going to stay a lot in John, although I'll flip in and out of John. But much of what I'll say is going to be based on the book of John. So let's start our study today from John chapter 1, verse 1 to 3. It's a passage I have referenced several times in my message, but we're going to look at it a little bit closer than it has been in previous times. John chapter 1, verse 1 to 3. And we read these majestic words. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him, nothing was made that was made. One of the first things you will notice about this passage is the use of him in reference to word. Now, normally when we talk about word, a word is not a him. Your word is an it. But in this passage, the word is a him. The word is a person. It's a personality. The Greek word that is translated as word, and we always go to the Greek because the New Testament was written originally in Greek. And so the original meaning of the word is very important to your understanding. The Greek word that is translated word is a Greek word logos. Logos. The Greek word logos means a word that is uttered by a living voice. A word that is uttered by a living voice. It is that by which an inner thought is revealed. It reveals an inner thought. So wherever there is word, there is thought. But thought cannot express itself unless there is a word. So in a theological context, the word is God's living word to us. It's a person, and that person is Jesus. It's God's living word, God's logos. In the beginning was the logos, and the logos was God, and the logos was God. There are several things that I want to bring your attention to in this passage. The first thing is that the logos is eternal. He is eternal. The Word is in the beginning. In the beginning was the Word. The Word is not an afterthought. He's not an entity that shows up later in time. The Word is eternal. Whatever or whenever the beginning was, the Word was. The Word was in the beginning. The Word is eternal. So this Word is not just something that shows up later in time. This Word has a pre-existence in eternity. Secondly, the Word is relational. Relational. Why do I say that? Because the Bible says the Word was with God. With God. So there is a relationship there. That phrase with God establishes a relationship. Although in the Bible you will never find the word Trinity written in the Bible. Anywhere in the Bible you'll not find the word Trinity. But the idea, the concept, the doctrine of the Trinity is established throughout the Bible. From Genesis, when God says, let us make man in our image, right up to here where he says the Word was with God, you see a relationship. There is a Godhead and there is a relationship in the Godhead. So, there is relationship. That's very important. Third, the Word is divine. And that is the boldest statement, probably, in the whole statement. And the Word is God. The Word is not with God as an angel or some other heavenly being. The Word is with God as God. The Word is not a man. The Word is divine. The Word is God. Everybody say, the Word is God. And this establishes one of the major foundations of the Christian faith. Jesus is not just a great teacher, a great philosopher, a good man, a nice man, a founder of a religion. Jesus is God. God himself, God in the flesh. So the Word is God, divinity. So he's eternal, he's relational, he is divine. Now, when you look at the first three statements that John chapter 1 verse 1 makes, those statements have nothing to do with man or with creation. It has to do with what existed before the universe and man came on the scene. So when you read, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, it says nothing about man. It doesn't even say anything about creation. It doesn't say anything about what we have now. It says everything about what existed before the universe came into being. So this is heavy. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word is God. The Word was with God. The Word is God. He was in the beginning with God. But then when you verse 3, it's shifted from what existed before creation to creation. So we realize in verse 3 that all things were made by him. By who? The Word. All things were made by the Word. So the Word is not just divine, it's not just eternal, it's not just relational. The Word is a creator. All things were made by the Word. So creation is a product of the Word. When we read the passage, God said, let there be. It is the Word in action, because that is the Word that brings things into being. Now, when you read the Bible and you read from Genesis chapter 1, you read the phrase, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then the next phrase says, and the earth is without form. Now, that first sentence, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, the Bible doesn't tell us when that happens. And it doesn't tell us how it happened. What you read from Genesis chapter 1 downwards is how the earth was prepared for man. But before that happened, there had been a creation. The heavens, everything had already been created. Then God focused on the earth and prepared it for man. That's what you see in Genesis. But what brought all of that into being? The heavens, the planets, the galaxies, all the huge manifestation of the universe, they came because of the word. So this word is awesome. It's not just some weak little word speaking. It's just the power that brings everything into manifestation. And then in Genesis chapter 1, we see the word and how he creates. Let there be light. Let there be firmament. Let us make. That is the word in action. In the beginning is the word. The word is God. The word is God. The word is creator. So I want you for a moment to ponder the magnificence of this being that is called the word. He's not just a sound. He's eternal. He's the creator. He's eternal. He's the creator. He's holy. He's just. He's true. He's God. Then, as we read John chapter 1, we find that this word had to do something because, you know, the word is the one who said, let us make man in our image. That is the word. So the initiator and the one who produced this is the word. The word, let us make man, let there be. That's the word in action. So when man is lost, if man is lost, if man sins, if man is a castaway, if man loses his relationship with God, it stands to reason that the word has to be involved in redeeming the man because the word actually brought the man into existence. So the word has to pursue the man who is lost. The difficulty is the word is spirit. You can't see him. He's spirit. He's a person, but he's a spirit being. And the word has to come and save man. So how is the word going to do that? So in verse 14 of John chapter 1, something very interesting happens to the word. The word, which is spirit, which is eternal, which is the creator, steps into a new dimension of operation. John chapter 1 verse 14 says, and the word became flesh and dwelt amongst us. And we beheld his glory. Whose glory? The glory of the word. The glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. This is a very profound statement. The word, this thing that creates everything, that is eternal, that pre-existed the universe, now becomes flesh. The word became flesh. When he became flesh, he's still the word, but he's the word now with flesh. What does that mean? It means several things. One, that the word took on human form. The word took on human form. The word was born. He was clothed with the same material as human beings are clothed in. Human beings have flesh and blood. The word took on flesh and blood. He took on human form. Philippians says it so well that he humbled himself and became a man and died. The word took on human form. Secondly, it means that the word becomes God's only begotten son. The word became God's only begotten son. He became a son when he took on flesh. Before he took on the flesh, he was not a son. He was the word. But the word became God's son when he took on flesh. So he became a son for a purpose. It is a redemptive relationship, and we'll go into that later. In the first Adam, God put his spirit into man. In the case of the last Adam, God became the man. So he didn't just put his spirit, he became the man. He put on flesh and became the only begotten of the Father, the begotten Son. The third thing is that the Word lived amongst men. The Bible says he dwelt amongst us. The Word experienced human life. He dwelt amongst us. He was not a phantom. He was not an illusion. He was not a concept. He was a real historical being. He lived as a human with a date of birth and a census record. Jesus is not just an idea. Jesus is an actual human recorded being. The Word became flesh and dwelt amongst us. Isaiah had said his name will be called Emmanuel, God with us. So when the Word was dwelling amongst us, God was mingling with his creation. He didn't just create us, he mingled with us. He stood where we stood, experienced where we experienced, so he can lift us to his level. The Word experienced human life. And fourthly, the Word revealed God in human form. John says, we beheld his glory. We beheld his glory. If you wanted to see God, you saw the Word.